What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back live with Whiskey Wednesday. My good friend, Josh Lehue in South Carolina joining us. We got Jake behind the scenes, making sure that we see all of our topics and you guys hear us and see us perfectly fine. And so we're going to dive right in. You guys know this is a live show on Wednesdays where we go into different trending topics, things that are happening in the economy on that are affecting us as short-term rental investors. So we've got a lot of different things to chat about today. Some of the regulars paying attention to what's going on with possible interest rate hikes or pauses. I don't think we have any chance of a cut today. The Fed is meeting this afternoon. And so in a couple hours, we're going to know whether they decided to hold or to raise interest rates. And so we'll talk in a little bit about what we think about that. We're going to talk, the numbers came in on the boost for the World Cup in a lot of those host cities. It was pretty good. Josh, we're going to talk back about Airbnb eliminating that split fee model. Very, very important for those hosts that are that did not get affected by that back in October of last year. And it's really, really important for you to understand what that means to your pricing. So we're going to hit on that with a little bit more detail today. AI risk to OTAs is margin squeeze, not disintermediation. I don't know, Josh, you're throwing some big words at me with that topic. So I don't even know what the hell disintermediation means. And so I'm going to have you explain that to me. And so I can make some comments on it. And so 30 days. Also, you know, we actually talked about this a little bit on a coaching call, but 30-day stays can become a landlord-tenant problem, something you need to think about if you're moving toward some of those longer or midterm stays. And then we're going to talk about what people book properties they trust. And so about quality is not synonymous with luxury. Man, I'm having, you guys are throwing some big words on my notes here. I mean, I need to keep it simple, you know. Consumer sentiment, we're hitting all-time lows, not all-time lows, but lows right now. And it's been going down a little bit. And we'll talk about some different pricing strategies. So we're going to dive right in. We don't have any shout outs, Jake. Nothing to shout out. We had a couple properties last week, and it's a little bit slow week with new launches. What about any questions we have coming in? As a reminder, this is a live show. Some of you that are watching it live, we don't have a huge live audience yet. We need to see if we can get a little bit bigger live audience. We're trying to go live on these, and we'll see if we can give you the opportunity to actually jump on almost like a coaching call. So we'll get interrupted. If you do have a question, put it in the comments. Jake will pay attention to those on the platforms, and we'll get him. He'll just interrupt us, and we'll get them answered. So if you are here live, take advantage of it and get those questions answered live. We don't need to have it necessarily on the agenda. Just shoot it over, and we'll get it. Jake will interrupt us, and we'll make sure that we get it answered. So we'll dive right in. Numbers are in. The Business Wire says FIFA boosted STR properties by 60% in the host cities. We expected that. That's awesome. It was a huge event. I am not a soccer fan, but I thought it was a very uniting type of an event. Like, I think everybody just kind of got on board, and everybody had their country pride, and there was different, you know, people from all over the world who were here supporting their teams. And it was a fun event. It was a big event. It ended up being, you know, if you ended up having a short-term rental or were in the hospitality world in any of those host cities, 60% increase in revenue. That's a pretty nice little bump. So we won't hit on that a ton, but just the numbers did come in that most of the host cities averaged about 60% jump in revenue. So that is, if you are in some of those bigger markets and some of those bigger areas that has the potential for some of these big events, World Cup, Olympics, Super Bowls, things like that are going on, that come into your cities, you can take advantage of that. I know they're one time, or, you know, they come in, you know, probably one time type of an event. I wouldn't buy properties around those types of cities, but they can be a big boost when they do come in. And so it's a congrats to all of those people that had those properties and got that nice boost. And I think that overall, I think that the overall grade on the World Cup was a pretty positive one. I think everybody really enjoyed it, even those of us that don't really follow soccer too much. And so, and those of you that did, I think it was a really fun thing to have here and be able to kind of watch our Cinderella team a little bit. I don't think there was huge expectations. I think the U.S. team outperformed their expectations and made it probably, you know, it was kind of hard to see how they played their last game, but I think they did a good job, and I think everybody's proud of them. So Federal Reserve meeting today. Josh, what are your thoughts? Any chance we're going to get a hold, a rise? What are your betting odds that we get a rate hike today in a couple hours?
I mean, I'm definitely not betting on lowering rates right now. Now that we're back in war with Iran for the 63rd time since February, I don't think it's going to really be a big boost to anybody's items there. You know, when we looked at the unemployment reports, we look at housing prices, we look at inventory. I mean, it. And I'm not the smartest, you know, crayon in the box in this space, but in general, I would assume they might be, you know, our best case would be a hold. I mean, it's leaning more towards going up, but you know, you've got a lot of political pressure. Political pressure theoretically should not be changing the Fed's opinion. The Fed's opinion should be the Federal Reserve. That should be what they're doing, is protecting our economy. There always is political pressure to lower. So I think
I agree. I think it's going to be a close call. I think it's going to be kind of a split with the Fed chair members there and the Fed, what do they call them? Fed governors or something. They call them something. But I think it's going to be a split, like where some of them are going to think we should hike. Some are going to think we should hold. You know, Warsh is in between a rock and a hard spot. If you really think about it, I mean, it's a very difficult position to be in. They're kind of in a lose-lose type of a situation all the way around. That, you know, it was interesting because CPI dropped so much in June, and ultimately, when they look at that, that would be an indication that, you know, we're, you know, inflation's coming down a little bit, and you know, we can afford a little bit of a reduction. And but there's all the other factors that are going into it. Like you said, I mean, we're, you know, oil's spiking again. We've got, you know, like you said, every other day we turn around and Trump's going to blow Iran off the map. And, you know, I might do it tonight. You know, I might bomb them tonight. It might be over. And we listen to that every other day. It feels like it's like, you know, kind of, I'm to the point where, you know, do something or don't, and get the hell out of there, or do your bombing. One of the two. At this stage in the game, it's like, just do something. But it keeps this like roller coaster of, yep, we've got signs that we can drop the rates. Oh, nope, they're going to go up. And Warsh is in a pickle right now, because there's a lot of, you know, consumer sentiment's down. Prices now on energy are skyrocketing again and going up. And you've got, you know, there's a lot of things that are. And I think you can make the argument on both sides of the coin. I think it's going to be a tough argument to lower rates. And so I think that our best, our best hope is that they stay the same and that they hold. But I think it's going to be a close decision. So we'll watch it very closely. Obviously, rates affect us as investors, which is why we talk about this on a pretty regular basis. But it is, something that we need to pay attention to. We'll know today whether they're going to whether they're going to go up or down. And I think that the markets have already started baking in. We saw mortgage rates rise, a few weeks ago, and they were already baking in some rate increases based on kind of the hawkish conversations that were out there. And it is, I know that's what the markets do. They're like trying to anticipate and look ahead, but we already saw them go up, I think, from like 6.3 on average to about 6.8. So we saw about, on the mortgage side, about a half a percent increase over the last couple of weeks. And so I'm hoping it holds. It's tougher and tougher to underwrite deals when these rates are going up. And, you know, but it also, on the flip side of the coin, always creates more opportunities. And it's like when the environment is kind of tough to make deals work, and the odds are stacked against you to make these deals work, the prices continue to go up. I mean, we're seeing prices continue to go up. However, it is homes are sitting on the market longer, and it's much easier to negotiate. So I think you really need to take that into account and say, hey, listen, as much as we hear about all the bad news and all of this kind of stuff, it is also good news in the fact that that's when opportunities are out there. That's when you're going to find your best opportunities. And I can speak to that 100%, you know, with 100% conviction that we find our best deals in markets like this and environments like this, not in environments when everybody thinks everything's going well. And so, just kind of that's the silver lining when we're talking about some of these struggles out there in the marketplace.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at, we've talked about it, and you've said it, I don't know how many times, at least 243 in the last 2 years, you know, but it'll be like, you know, hey, like, if you're waiting for this half point drop or this 1 point drop, whatever it is, and you've been waiting for 1 year, 2 years, where could you be today had you moved and made the decision before? If the number, if the math maths out and you're worried about another $100, $200 a month, and that's making the determining factor, yes or no. When you look at the long-term gains, appreciation, the tax benefits, the note pay down, all those lifestyle usage, all those things that, that we can measure, you know what I mean? You're behind, you're still behind, right? If the, if the rates dropped a point today, right? And you could have bought 2 years ago, you're still 100%. Behind where you could be 2 years
ago. And that's what you have to look at. It is, it's, you're so much better off getting in the game in this type of environment than sitting and waiting for a better environment. You're just, when you run the numbers, when you put it on paper and you look on all your different scenarios, write it down and say, okay, based on what it is today, based on what I hope it goes to or where I would be comfortable buying, write that down and say, let's say that takes a year or two to get there. And then write both of them as if you bought it today at the, you know, the not as desirable terms and rates, or if you waited and bought it at better and more desirable terms and rates, how much did you leave on the table in those couple of years? And it's way more significant than most people even realize. And so, because you're picking up, somebody else is paying down a note, you're getting some appreciation, even though it's not a ton right now, you're still picking up appreciation in most of the markets. Like, you know, the majority of your markets, you're still picking up appreciation at 2 to 5%. And so that's still a big deal to leave that on the table. You've also got the big tax advantages. You've got the cash flow in the meantime, assuming that you're able to find cash flow properties, which we are. And, you know, they're harder to find. You have to look at more properties, but they're out there, right? And so it's a better, you know, you're going to be better off in a, you know, than waiting in most scenarios, but don't take my word for it. Just write it on a piece of paper. It's pretty simple math to do. And you have five things to consider in, or four things to consider in real estate. You have your cash flow, your note pay down, your appreciation, and your tax advantages. Write it down as if you bought it today at the less desirable rates and current, you know, prices. And then fast forward 2 years, maybe assume a smaller appreciation, say 2% appreciation. Just say you left 2% on the table every year. And then how much did the note get paid down? You left 2% of appreciation on the table. What tax advantage did you give up for those couple of years? And you look back, you're like, man, I left more money than I thought on the table by sitting on the sidelines. And I think it's important to run those numbers.
You know, and also with note pay down, I mean, your amortization schedule, your interest is front loaded. Your 2 year or 3 year principal monthly is very different than year one. Year one, there's not a lot of principal going on, right? And if you look at those numbers, I mean, like it's sad to look at it year one, right? And is that the snowball gets bigger and faster, you know, the avalanche gets bigger going downhill. You know what I mean? You're in a much more advantageous
now, position. Now, I will tell you, you're exactly right. It gets way better as time goes on. And you're exactly right. Most of the payment that you're paying is interest those first couple of years. And then it gets better. Every single year, you get a little bit more principal paid down, you know, for the whole 30 years. And so, but I will tell you, if you run the scenario and go do it on your calculator, buy a $500,000 home, put 20% down, you put $100,000 down, and you got a $400,000 mortgage at about 7%, you're picking up still, even at the front end of that loan, you're still picking up about $5,000 a year in note pay down, in principal pay down on that mortgage that somebody else is paying for. So I'm picking up a 5% return on my 100 grand just by having somebody pay my note down for me. And that's as low as it's going to be, right? That's as low as your note pay down is going to be, because every year you're going to pick up more and more of that. And that's going to, you know, 5-10 years from now, that turns into double that. And all of a sudden you're like, man, I'm getting a pretty nice return just on a break even property that somebody else is paying for. And so this is where people, when you actually sit down and think about it and run the math, and you would not let these types of environments keep you on the sideline, because there are a lot of good buying opportunities. And it is one of those situations where you have to understand the game you're playing. You have to understand how to make sure you don't get into a bad deal, because I will tell you that probably 80 to 90% of the deals and properties we look at don't work really well for our game, for the short-term rental game. Maybe they work for something else. Maybe, you know, you could still buy a property and live in it because you love it. But for a positive cash flowing short-term rental, I would say 80 to 90% of the properties we look at do not work. And so you still have to be diligent about finding the right property. But when you do, this is the type of environment to find the best deals. And so I think it's something to, you know, we talk about the rates all the time. We watch it really close, and it's by far and away the number one thing that keeps people on the sideline. And the funniest part about it is, one, you can buy down that rate. You can get 7-1 arms. You can do different things to get that rate paid down to the place where you're comfortable. And it costs a little bit of money on the front end, but guess what? It's pretty easy to get sellers to negotiate that stuff right now and pick up the bill for that note pay down and that rate pay down. For that rate pay down. And you buy it down to a cheaper rate, and you're sitting on a better situation. And also, you're going to be able to refinance at some point, right? And so at some point, now you don't want to bank on the refinance. You need to make sure it works today. But then when you do refinance, it's like giving yourself a raise, right? It's like, hey, listen, I just got a big bonus, and I just got a big raise, which is awesome. Right? And that is something that is very, very likely and possible when you have properties and the environment does change on the rates as you refinance it. So, okay, we'll move on that. I know we've got a couple hours before Worst comes out and says what they're going to plan on doing, but I'm with you. I think that the betting odds are also with us that it's likely going to be a pause, not a rate hike. But I think that's about as good as we can hope for. I think that they say, like most of the things, it's a 0% chance of a rate decrease. And so we'll move on. So this is we're going to talk about the eliminating the split fee model. I'm going to have you talk about it because, you know, you self-manage and you don't use a property management software tool and or a property manager managing your property. So for those of us that do have property managers or property management software tools, we had to make this change back in October of last year. Now they're saying, Airbnb is saying, okay, now everybody needs to make this change. We're getting away with the split fee. What that means is when the guest goes and books your property, as a host, you can check split fee. What that means is the guest was going to pay 15% as a 15.5% as a service fee on Airbnb, and the host pays 3%. Well, last year they came out and said, hey, we're going to make it to where the host has to cover that entire amount now. Right. So the host had to do. So we talked a lot about, hey, listen, if you don't raise your prices, you're going to leave some money on the table. You're going to take a huge haircut and you have to raise your prices around that 18%, maybe about 18.5% to be able to make sure that you're making the same amount of money that you would make right now. Now, a lot of hosts, and I think it's going to be a bigger problem on this group of hosts because this is less professional host, if you will. Not that you're not professional, Josh, but it is. They're the hosts that have one property or so, and they're just using Airbnb, and they're not paying attention to all the tools that they have available. The last change was more property managers, more professional hosts that had multiple properties, and they were saying, okay, it's really scary to go raise my rates by 18%. Now that kept the same price to the consumer. That's what they don't understand. A lot of them, I've talked to a lot of people back when this happened back in October, is the consumer seeing the same price because they were seeing your price plus the 15.5% anyways. And so their end price remained the same. So if you make this 18.5% increase in your prices, the consumer is paying the same price. Airbnb is making the same money. It's just coming out of your pocket instead of splitting it up and the majority of it coming out of the guest pocket, right? So where I think is going to happen, and I think that's why it's important for us to talk about it on the podcast, to really let hosts that are managing their own properties, just using Airbnb, that this is going to apply to them now, where they are going to go away from the split fee, is they have to be comfortable with the price increase. It's very, very hard to talk to somebody about increasing prices. We do this all the time. We're always asking for premium prices. We're always talking to people about pushing their prices. Normally we're asking and saying, hey, we're going to push our prices and I have to give the consumer reason to pay me more. In this case, the consumer's not paying you more. They're paying the same amount. And I think that's what's really important for hosts to wrap their heads around is, but if you don't, and you leave that money on the table and give the guest an 18% discount, you're going to cut your revenue by 18%, and it's a big deal. And you're really cutting it by about 15.5%, but that's a big deal. And so, Josh, I know that you, like we talked and touched on this last week, but I think it's important to talk to the hosts that are managing their own properties on Airbnb. They're not using the property manager. They're not using the property management software system. And understanding what this means and how they should go about doing. And you did say that Airbnb is making it a little bit easier for those hosts than they did the last time because it's doing some of the math for us. So talk to me about that.
Right. Right. So let's, you know, rewind. Typically, if you go back to previous October 27th, before that, right, and you basically everyone could choose to be on the split fee or host only fee, whatever you wanted to do. The host always paid 3% as a host fee, right? Whether you bake that into your rates, whether you bake that into your underwriting, that 3% is coming out one way or the other. Doesn't matter. Okay. Now what's happening is, you know, two things kind of happened. One, you go back about 2 years ago, the SEC started cracking down, maybe it was the FTC started cracking down on junk fees. So it's, you know, your Ticketmasters and all that stuff are basically these platforms that are, you know, are selling these things are just screwing the consumer over. Right. And so they started cracking down on this. And now one way these companies can still make their profit is to say, hey, we're not charging any of these fees anymore to the consumer. We're charging it to the seller. Right. So it alleviates that legal piece of it. You're right, though. The consumer's money doesn't change. If we balance out what we're supposed to do, whether you have a PMS or not, your net to pocket and the consumer's money doesn't change. All that happens when the consumer looks on the receipt, essentially, and sees the line item expenses, it no longer says Airbnb platform fee or service fees, right? It makes Airbnb look like the good guy versus, you know, these greedy hosts are taking too much money. Because what it looks like, if the consumer goes and sees, oh, Airbnb is charging a 15% surcharge, and they go to VRBO, which doesn't have that split model, and even though the same numbers are happening,
right?
I'm going to go to VRBO. It's the same money. My net to pocket doesn't change whether it's Airbnb, doesn't change whether it's VRBO, doesn't change whether it's direct. My net to pocket per booking stays relatively the exact same, right? This time, what I do like about it is the average host, the majority of hosts out there, they're not PMS integrated. They don't run more than one property. They're mom and pop businesses, you know what I mean? And they're just running a small little side hustle, right? Asking them to equate 15.5% across fees and all this stuff, they're not going to do it. They're not going to know how to do it. And it's going to leave them really angry when their payouts are coming in massively different. So now Airbnb's like, hey, every time you open your Airbnb app right now, if you're not PMS integrated, it asks you every single time. And it says, do you want to go ahead and change this? Hey, you hit this button. We will adjust all your rates for you. You still price exactly the same. And we will adjust it all for you. And nothing to your pocket will change. They made it simple. Right. Because the average person isn't going to be able to figure out the math on that. Right. That doesn't speak well to our education, but that is what it is. Right. Now that you have Priceless integrated or whatever, Airbnb's making it easy for those small hosts to say, OK, I can just go ahead and do this. My underwriting doesn't change. My rates don't really change on my end. I'm not having to go figure out October dates versus, you know, peak July dates. It's going to do it all for me and everything remains the same. That's perfect. I don't think there's any real problems with that. I think what you're going to see happen, though, so this is happening. This happens no matter what to everybody on September 15th. I think what you're going to see is for the first few weeks and maybe even the first few months, you're going to see a big switch of people that didn't hit the easy button. They refused to do it, and they just got shoved into that market. There's a lot of – not every property is at the top of the market, right? The top of the market is a very small group, and there's a lot more of that funnel down below you, right? And they're going to mess up, and they're going to see profit. Oh, well, my occupancy spiked in September, October, November. Yeah, because your rates were 15% cheaper than they should have been, right? And then your net to pocket is massively different. I think secondly, what you're going to see, because we have seen this with the PMS integrated properties post-October, some of the smaller, maybe less – savvy PMs suddenly were overtaxing or overcharging their hosts or their owners, right? I think you're going to see that as well. There are many hosts out there who don't use a PMS system. They maybe co-host other properties, you know, whatever that may be, and they may have their payouts affected because they didn't go and do the math the right way. So essentially, if you're with a host that's doing business like that, keep an eye on your payouts, because as of September 15th, those numbers may change a little bit. I think it's a good thing overall. It makes it simple. It makes them on the same playing field where the consumer isn't worried more about VRBO or direct bookings. But no matter how you do it, your net to pocket should not be changing.
I totally agree. This would be a non-issue if they just kind of started here. And all they're doing is saying, hey, listen, we want when the guest books a property, they don't want it to look like they're getting nickel and dime with fees from the OTA. Cause you're exactly right, Josh. They're going to say, well, I'm not going to book on Airbnb. I'll go to Vrbo, even though they're paying the same price for the same home. And, they don't see the fees on there, right? They're saying, I'd rather pay a higher rate nightly rate and not get nickel and dime to death. We hear that a lot on consumer, like we say that as consumers. I don't know how many times I've said that, like, just charge me for what you need to charge me. Don't nickel and dime me with all this other extra stuff. Just tell me what you need to charge me. And that's what they're really doing now, is saying that. And then they're saying, okay, listen, we still need to have our service fees paid, so we're going to charge this as a host. You guys just raise your prices and make sure that it's the same to the guest. And we'll even help you do that. But, and they didn't help us do that last time. Everybody had to do that on their own. And there was a lot of people who left a lot of money on the table. And to your point, Josh, watch if you're using a co-host, working with a co-host. Most of your property managers have already made this change. But if it's a co-host specifically, you need to look at those payouts and make sure that they're not, you know, that they made that change for you on your behalf, so that you're not taking a massive haircut. Okay, so we're gonna move on. And we'll keep trying to remind you. I think that when is it? September 15th. It's mandatory. So you have from now until September 15th. You might as well just do it. Most of us that have got property managers, which is the majority of the market anyways, most of us that are that have multiple properties that are have done the PMS systems, we've already done it. So you might as well just do it and have your pricing correct and raise those prices. It's not going to be a disadvantage for you in the marketplace, because the consumer is going to see the same price. Your payout's going to remain the same. It's just your payout now has a bigger expense to Airbnb than it did before. Before it was taken out before they gave you your payout. So your payout's larger, and then you have a bigger expense. And right now you're taking a lower payout with a lower expense, right? And so you just make that adjustment. I think you got to make it. We'll keep reminding you September 15th is the day. And use the easy button. There's no reason to do the math yourself. Just click on it. They've made it easy for you to do it. So moving on, AI risk to OTAs. Is margin squeeze not disintermediation? Josh, big words for you there. Tell me what you mean by that, because I'll have some comments once I understand what we're actually talking about here.
Yeah, so that was the title of the article.
You didn't throw it in there just to make me look bad.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever used my vocabulary. No, man, I had to look it up, you know, to see what it was. But we touched on this a little bit last week, and I actually went through this process personally to kind of test it out, right? So essentially, what it's saying is more and more people are starting to use AI, you know, GPT, Claude, whatever, to help them find their vacation spots, right? So they put their prompt in, but you have to remember, similar to what we talked about with, you know, most hosts, most users of AI use it like Google. They're like, what's the weather? What is this over here? And you're literally using it like a web browser versus, you know, and what it's capable of. So basically what it's saying is, like, as more and more consumers use that, they may be able to bypass a lot of your Airbnb and VRBO filters that are trying to, like, steer you the right direction, learn about you, use your data, all those things that every company wants to do. I have two thoughts about that. First off, I have seen, not so much on our property, but I've seen in a couple of Vossi member properties that have asked me questions about something. And one that Chris B had I think brought up on our in-house AMA call a week or two ago, that a guest seemed completely unaware of where they had booked, right? They got there and they're like, this is not, you know what I mean? And I'm assuming, kind of based upon the questions and stuff that were in the policy, that they may have used AI to find this booking, and then they trusted the AI reading of the booking and they booked without going through the actual listing itself and looking at the location and where it was. You know what I mean? And I think you're going to see people use AI sloppy, and they're going to end up making sloppy decisions. And I think that you're going to see that they don't double check. Right. So anyway, what I did for us personally, we are going on a family vacation the week before Thanksgiving, right? We are in the central area of South Carolina. We are 4 hours from anywhere, right? We're looking for a mountain area. We would like to have an indoor pool, and we would love either long range views or waterfront, right? And those are kind of our non-negotiables. We can get to the Smokies. We can get to the western North Carolina area. We can get down to the Blue Ridge area, all within about a 3 to 4 hour drive distance from us. So it's a very wide swath. Various. So I'm like, you know, let me use GPT. I built out a very complex prompt with everything we were looking for, and I wanted the top 30 options that fit the criteria across our selected markets. Out of those 30, two of them were viable. They met the actual search criteria we were looking at. The other 28, in fact, the majority of them were completely wrong, right? They were nowhere near the ballpark. They were in Iowa. Like, I don't know how long it takes me to get to Iowa from South Carolina, but I think it's a little bit longer than 4 hours. Right. And it was just wrong. It didn't know, you know, whether my prompt wasn't the best, or maybe I'm just really good on the OTAs. So that's what I do for a job. right? But in general, the 30 responses it gave back to me, two of them, so 1/15 of them were valuable. Right. And those two were two of our top choices from actually using the OTAs or in searches as well. So they did find two of the 30 that we were looking at. Right. What I would look at that is, I don't know at this point, without having a better design prompt or your GPTs or Claudes having better, maybe in-depth access to, I don't know where, at what point Airbnb blocks them. Right. Is there are certain points where it doesn't let those bots in any further? Are we missing pieces of that? But your OTAs, especially Airbnb, are really, really rolling out AI features to help with native language. So I can just type into a box what I'm looking for. I don't have to nerd it out. I can say I'm looking for A, B, C, D, E, and it will go read your listing and then based upon your reviews and all those pieces and then feed you those properties back to you. I believe still where we are that the OTAs themselves are the best places to search for, on the OTAs. I don't think we're quite at a point yet where we can really rely fully on your AI systems to be your travel agent.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have been really paying attention, have fairly strong opinions about the quality of the output with a lot of AI stuff. And I know it can be amazing. We use it a lot. We've built agents inside the company. We're doing all different things. We've loaded them up. However, I feel like lately we're getting a lot more garbage out than we did even, 6 months ago. And I don't know if it's because there's so much information out there and everybody's just regurgitating the same thing and over, because even when you're like, hey, something's wrong and you go back to the AI and the bot and you say, hey, listen, that's off. Like, why did you come up with that? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, you're right. Good catch. Right. I can't tell you how many times the AI agents and on all different platforms are saying, oh yeah, you're right, Sean. Good catch. You must know this game or you must understand what's going on. And I'm like, yeah. But what about the people who are using this as actually almost like gospel anymore? Right. It's like, I have a very strong opinion that it is. I really think people are going to go way more analog than they are digital in the very near future. I feel like I don't think AI is going away. Don't get me. That's not what I'm saying at all. Like, I think that this is massively accelerating a lot of different things. But I also think that people they're going to get back to the point where it's like, hey, listen, I mean, look at like the trend of younger people getting flip phones and stuff. And they're like, I'm done with the smartphones. I'm done with all this stuff. Just give me a regular phone. And I think that we want that as consumers. And you're looking at it saying the same thing. You're like, okay, I want to see how it does. It gave you 2 out of 30 suggestions that were actually viable and accurate. That's what it worries me about what's going on with the AI. So the AI agents, I just heard another stat about the AI agents online, where it's basically taken over the internet, which it's grown by 8,000%. Over 60% of internet traffic with responses on the socials, over 60% chance it's a bot or an AI agent. You're not even like, a lot of times you're chatting with somebody online and you're making comments. We see it. We have comments on our stuff all the time. We know they're bots. And you're like, there's a lot that they look like real people and they seem like real people. And so if all of these different conversations start happening and you're chatting with agents and all these large language learning models, right? They're just taking all this information. Well, what if the majority of the information isn't accurate or it's just bots anyways, and they don't really have opinions. They don't really know what they're asking. And all of a sudden the output starts to become worse and worse. Right. And so, I think that it's going to be very interesting when it comes to things like this. I think when it's, when it's code or when it's formulas or when it's things that are very cut, like black and white, right? I know like I can go figure this out. It's black and white, but when it comes down to actually trying to understand somebody's intent and feelings and what they're looking for, what they're not, it's missing, right? It seems like it misses worse now than it did even 6 months ago. I don't know why, if that's because there's way more information and they're getting information from other bots and other agents that aren't real people. I don't know what the answer to that is. But I feel like we're becoming less, like there's a trust recession as it is. And I think that you're going to find that people are not going to start taking these answers as cut and dry and is, like I said, like almost like gospel, like, yeah, this is right because it came off of ChatGPT. I think we're starting to question that again. And I think that that's a good thing, because what that comes down to is you still have to have the knowledge and the understanding of what you want, the intentions of what you have, like get involved in it. Go and the, I mean, we use it in marketing all the time. We use it for, you know, all of our stuff. But when we talk about marketing properties, we are super old school. We're saying, what do people want? Like, what are people looking for? Like, what do we talk about when we said, hey, AI is suggesting your property to all these different people? What did I say? I said, listen, write down all the details in the information in your description so the AI can read it. But guess what? People still want to see the property. They still want to feel that experience. They want to understand what they're getting into. The AI can't read that. And so we're going to double down way more into saying, hey, listen, we're betting on that people are going to start to distrust all of this AI suggestions as much as they're going to say, just show me the property. Let me look at it and let me make the decision. And so it's up to us to really put these properties together to create these unique experiences, articulate these great experiences. And that's all articulated through photos. We're not even using words to articulate it. And AI is not reading the photos that well. And so it's going to be very interesting to see moving forward, but my money's on, and I'm going to put some big bets on that. The fundamentals are what's going to matter. And so that actually leads us into another topic that Jake just sent me, that people are booking properties they trust. This is really interesting. It's right what we're talking about. Verbo's research shows 86% of travelers would pay more for a vacation rental with a higher quality listing, and it rises to 92% among Gen Z travelers. However, what they're looking for is not like crazy amenities and all this kind of crazy stuff that we talk about all the time. They're looking for exceptional cleanliness, reliable, like just core amenities like appliances, Wi-Fi, AC, comfortable beds, quality linens, a host that communicates, like all of those different things that are just fundamentals in the game. They're like, just give me the fundamentals. Just stick to the fundamentals and do a really good job with the fundamentals. How many times do we talk about in over the years of saying, listen, there's three fundamental pillars that you have to dial in. And we talk about the fundamentals all the time. These are givens. And the fact that consumers are saying, hey, we're just looking for the basics. Like, I'm just looking for the good, like the basics. You just dial in the fundamentals. I'm happy. What that tells me is there's a lot of people in our game that are not doing that. That's the problem. And that's the underlying problem that you got to read between the lines there on this survey of saying, yeah, how is that what they're choosing? Because they're choosing that, and that makes a difference to them because there's been an experience that's not what they had, right? That's not what they've walked into. And so, you know, I think sometimes we take for granted that people are treating this as like professionally, like you got a great, like cleaning is, that's a non-negotiable, right? Core amenities, appliances, Wi-Fi, AC, comfortable beds, linens, detailed instructions, good communication, all of those things. Sometimes I think that we don't talk about that enough, that it is that because we assume that's just a given, right? Those are non-negotiables that should be in every property. So then we always just talk about the other stuff. And so what it's telling me is the consumers are experiencing the opposite. They're saying, hey, listen, you might have a cool pool. You might have invested in some really fun amenities and with your hot tubs and your saunas and everything else, but nobody communicated with me. The beds were uncomfortable. The property wasn't cleaned. Like, so they're complaining about that. They're saying, I just would rather have that. Just give me that, right? It's very, very interesting to me when you read between the lines of what this is saying, that travelers, 86% are just saying, hey, listen, we're just looking for quality. And quality is not luxury to them, right? It's saying, hey, listen, we just want you to deliver the fundamentals at a high level, and that is good enough for us. Now, I believe we need to do that plus the other. I'm not saying don't do the other. I'm saying it's pretty sad that the consumers are feeling like they have to say this is important to us. And I think that if you are a host that is not having all of those different things as non-negotiables, you better look in the mirror and say, is this the game you want to play?
I mean, look at it. I think it's one of your favorite books as well, but Winning, right? And he talks about, it was Michael Jordan's trainer. And Michael Jordan, every practice, every game, what did he start off with? The greatest player ever. It wasn't with dunking from the free throw line. It wasn't 3-point shots. Yep. He started with chest passes. Every single practice, every single game. But not only was it the most basic thing, it was giving the ball away, right? And trusting your team. It's a team sport. And that's the greatest player ever, right? He's not working all those other pieces there. We want to dial in the fundamentals. We have those basic things, and a clean property for every single guest is a non-negotiable. It's not, oh, the guests should just accept that we make mistakes. No, that's your mistake. It's not the guest's problem. It's the guest's problem because you messed up, right? Because you didn't start with chest passes. You started with dunking the basketball, right? Second thing, those are non-negotiables. If you're in an American market, at least AC in the most part is a non-negotiable, right? Like basic Wi-Fi, if it's not like, hey, we are an off the grid cabin, you don't have Wi-Fi, we don't have AC. And if you're looking for that rustic stay, this is what we're selling, right? And you're aware of that going in. You didn't go in there expecting those things to be there. It's very clearly laid out. These are non-negotiables. We've got to dial those pieces in and then talk about everything else. When you see the big flashy properties, and we have quite a few big flashy properties, it's not just making money today. These properties are 30-year notes, right? And this business model is not meant to be a one-year business model. You know, for the most part, you're probably still a little behind the curve a year in, maybe 2 years in, and you're still kind of getting that cash on cash return back or whatever, right? But where are you at year two, year three, year four, year five? And that's built upon the fundamentals, right? Everything else can be fixed. Everything else can be added. If your guest comes in, and one of your amenities, and it's a major amenity, is failing, we've got to find a way to mitigate that. But if you're a great host and everything else is tip top, we can smooth that over and we can fix that problem. 9 times out of 10, we can work with it, right? Cleaning's wrong, when one thing is wrong and it's a non-negotiable, they can't be wrong, and it is, everything else gets nitpicked. Everything else downstream is messed up, right? And I think that so many people worry about the silver bullet and not about all, to your point, it's a game of, you know, 1,000 golden BBs. You know what I mean? Is that, like, we need to have all those pieces in play, and these are non-negotiables every single stay, every single time. The worst Motel 6 has us fixed, right? You can't be in the hospitality business.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that article actually, it does frustrate me, sadden me a little bit that's not a non-negotiable across the board. Like, hosts or guests should not be having to say, hey, you guys, this is important. Like, we just want this stuff. We just want the fundamentals. And, you know, it is something we always say, you know, that, you know, we focus so much at the top of the markets. We focus so much on what it takes to be in top 1% property. We've got a whole wall in our office of 1% properties, and it's what we focus on. So sometimes I think we forget that the majority of these properties that are not doing well, and they're just kind of, they thought they were just going to buy a property, maybe they're just supplementing a vacation home, whatever it is, they're not taking the hosting and the hospitality side of the business as serious as they should, and they're probably not the people listening to this podcast anyways. But if you know anybody that is like that, I mean, they need to look in the mirror and say, get your shit together. I mean, let's actually raise the bar. This is the guest should not have that feeling in a survey like that, that they just want the fundamentals. Like, they should be given the fundamentals and dialed into the fundamentals at a high level. Cleanliness, communication, you know, the normal amenities working and operational, and those things that are, you know, good detailed instructions on things. I mean, those things shouldn't be at the top of a consumer's survey of what they want in a short-term rental. I mean, that stuff, I doubt that's right. What's on the top of a list on, if you're looking at hotel spaces, because like you said, that's just a given, right? That should be a given in our game as well. And if it's not, shame on you. If that's not a non-negotiable in your properties as a host, it's really disappointing. You're in the wrong game. You are probably getting crushed. We probably are crushing you anyways in the market, but you should be, and you're getting what you deserve. But if, for those of you that haven't been really thinking about it, and you're like, man, maybe I need to pay attention to that. You know, I hope you do. And I hope you take that to say, hey, listen, this is something that isn't non-negotiable. And, you know, the guests are saying they'll pay you for it. They want that stuff. They want the fundamentals that they can trust. Yeah. So moving on, last topic as we wrap up. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I mean, like, I'll just one thing on that real quick, how we do that. And you know what I mean? And we talk about this from the Bodicy. it's your reviews. It's your review currency. Your reviews tell the story of your property better than your listing does. Right. And so when you first launch a property and you've got 5, 10, 15 reviews, nobody trusts you yet. They don't believe in you. Right. We get that 20, 25 number. The consumer's okay. I'm starting to believe it. When you start having a property that's been humming along for 1, 2, 3 years and you hit 100, 200 reviews and they're five, you know, you got a 4.9, 4.95, 5-star, whatever it is, a consumer sees your property and they see that triple digit review number. And immediately you're going to be on their short list because they know they're going to have a good experience and they can trust the other 100 people, 200 people that have been there before them and said, this place is awesome, right? And now it softens you because every new property that comes to the market, maybe they have more bells and whistles than you. They don't have your review currency.
Right.
They don't have your clout, right? And that goes so long and that goes so far in this business on the OTAs. And it's why we stress so much is like, hey, the average review, like percentage of customers that review in the industry average is like 10%. Yeah. We push 90, and that 90% allows you to get to them top. And when you get that 20, 25, 30 plus review mark, now we can push prices. Now we can start controlling the narrative a little bit better, but we've got to.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's reflected in the reviews, and that is exactly where the consumer is saying, hey, listen, it's why it's so important. It's been important for a long time. There is a trust recession, and the biggest way to gain trust is have other people say good things about you, which on these platforms is our reviews. And so, and they will say stuff bad about you if you miss on those fundamentals, and rightfully so. They should, if you're really missing on the fundamentals. And so, you know, take that stuff serious. It is exactly why we stress so much on getting those reviews, and so that we can answer that question for the consumer of, can I trust this listing? Can I trust this host? And that's reflected 100% in what people are saying about your property in those reviews. So I'm glad you brought that up at the end there as that point, because it is, that's exactly how it's reflected. Okay, last one, because I know we're running out of time, but we're going to go to pricing strategy. And so what is the best pricing strategy for your short-term rental? AirDNA article argues that dynamic pricing is the best fit for most short-term rental hosts because it adjusts to demand, seasonality, lead time, and events. The article compares 5 different kinds of pricing across the board and pricing strategies. So pricing is a massive, massive topic that as a host, you need to really understand. And so hosts are focusing a lot on just the pricing, but they don't understand what's behind all the pricing, first of all. So I completely agree with AirDNA, the dynamic pricing tools that are out there, and there's multiples. We've talked about Price Labs, Wheelhouse, Beyond Pricing. AirDNA has their own now. A lot of these, Airbnb has a pricing tool built in there. And all it does is looks at demand, seasonality, lead times, events, all that kind of stuff, and it tells you where to price at. Where I have a problem with that is those plug and play, you leave a lot of money on the table. And so plug and play, you're just going to be the same, basically pricing suggestions as everybody else in the market. I was just talking about how we focus on operating the top of the market, getting our unfair share of business, charging more than other people charge. But then what happens there is pricing, people just think, okay, I can just go set those that pricing and I'm going to get more money. That's not how it works. There's a cost versus value conversation that happens in every single consumer's head every single time they spend money. It's like, okay, how much is this and how much value am I getting? If you're missing on the value piece, then you're not going to get the pricing piece. And so while the dynamic pricing tools are, what they're doing is taking the entire pie, everybody's properties, and saying, okay, and we're going to look at all the demand and they're going to suggest different pricing up or down. What happens is the middle of the market is super messy. Nobody makes any money. The top of the market is where everybody makes money. So if you're going to use those tools, you also have to have a strategy to apply to those rules or apply rules to those tools. And so that is where a lot of people miss. They think that having those dynamic pricing tools, that is going to solve their problem on revenue management. It's not. You have to, one, first and foremost, have the right property, the right experience that articulates enough value to justify these higher prices or the price that you're asking, right? And then ultimately, you have to be able to deliver that to the consumer in a way that makes sure you're not leaving a whole bunch of money on the table. That's where the dynamic pricing comes in. But there's a lot of different strategies within that, and you're going to be operating in different phases. Like we talk about, there's three pricing phases that I talk about a lot in Vodacy. The launch phase, that is the ultimate goal in the launch phase, is what we were just talking about. I just want to get bookings and I want to get reviews. I want people to come experience what we have and I want them to leave me a great review so that we start building a good reputation. I'm not trying to maximize my dollars on in the launch phase. I'm trying to say, okay, based on what I feel like my value is, I'm going to be a discount off of that value. Like, so my cost versus value is going to have an inverse ratio, right? High value, low cost. And so during that time, because I'm not really worried about maximizing my price, revenue during that time. And so that phase, I'm going to have different rules set up in my dynamic pricing tool than I will when I roll into my next phase, which is optimize. And so optimize is where I'm going to live most of my life as a short-term rental. And so launch phase, usually 3 to 6 months. And then once I build up 15, 20 reviews and I've got a good reputation, I start put my pricing to where I feel like I'm optimized, which that means is, what did I underwrite? What did I project that I was going to be at? Where do I want to stabilize my pricing at? And so we get into that optimized phase and make sure that we can still maintain the same amount of bookings, the same amount of momentum, and the occupancy and rates that we were really underwriting at. And during that phase, if I have to make adjustments, maybe my value is not there. Maybe I'm not articulating my value very well, and I'm not able to get that optimized pricing that I want. I need to make adjustments. Maybe it's my optimized, I underwrote it and I undershot what my potential was, and everything's just booking out solid. I'm way over occupancy in that market, or in that optimized phase. So now I'm going to kind of stabilize everything, and I'm going to make different rules to stabilize, right? So I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm saying, okay, I'm not just putting it into the dynamic pricing tool. Now I'm telling the dynamic pricing tool what to do. And I was just talking about this on a coaching call yesterday. It's a weekend market. They were booked solid for the weekends and they're trying to pick up the weekdays. And when they were raising their prices and the next phase, well, let me go to the next phase and I'll tell you the story. Next phase is maximize. Once you've kind of stabilized, once or twice a year, you're going to go into maximize phase and you're going to set different rules. And that maximize phase is going to say, okay, I'm going to see what I actually can get. And I'm going to raise my prices 5 to 10% every week until I start to hear crickets, basically. So I'm going to raise my prices, see if I get a couple bookings. I'm going to raise them another 5 or 10%. I'm going to wait and see if I get a couple bookings. I'm going to do that until I get zero bookings. And then I'm going to wait and say, okay, I'm going to do it another week and I'm going to hold for 2 weeks and I get zero bookings for 2 weeks. That's where I'm hitting the ceiling, right? That's where the consumer is saying, yep, your cost is more than your value. So I flip-flop that scenario and maximize is the opposite of the launch phase, where my cost is higher than my value. And I want the consumer to tell me that, so that now then I go dial back to the last pricing point that I was getting money. And that's my new optimized phase. Okay. So once I go through all that, then I look at it and they say, okay, how do I make some of these adjustments? And this is where these dynamic pricing tools miss a lot, is I have to put the rules inside of them. I need to know how to use them. And I need to understand, what is my strategy going to be? What is my pricing strategy? Because this is what revenue management is all about. And it's not just dynamic pricing. This particular member we were looking at, weekend market, and when they were in the maximized phase, what they were doing is they were raising their prices 10% across the board on all 7 days of the week. And they just kept going up and up and up till they got no bookings. But they were booking out all of the weekends, and then they didn't have any more weekends to book, and the weekdays were open, right? And they're like, how do we book the weekends? I said, well, we're way overpriced on the weekends, because what we needed to do in this market is actually not raise the prices on the weekdays as aggressively as we were the weekends. And so my whole point of telling you this is listening to this, what I hope you're thinking is, holy shit, there's a lot to this. And this is just like one little example that we go through a lot. And I think a lot of these tools suggest what is good for the whole, the majority. And if you want to be the minority, you have to do things a little bit different. It's not that we don't use these tools, but a lot of times these articles can be a little bit misleading. And I have people say, well, Sean, I read this and you love AirDNA and they said to do this, or Airbnb told me to do this. This coaching call yesterday, that they had 5 things that Airbnb told them to do that was going to help them in the algorithm. I said, I agree with all of that for most people, but not for you. because you don't want to be most people. You want to be different than most people. So we can use these tools, but we have to have our own strategy to become in the minority, which the minority for us is the top of these markets.
Like understanding your market and your property in that market is, I don't care what my neighbor's doing, right? My property is unique, right? And because it's unique, I get to do what I do. But we're in Hilton Head, South Carolina. 87% of our revenue for 2025 mm-hmm. came from March 1st to Labor Day, right? 87%, right? So my goal from March 1st to Labor Day is to maximize my pricing as high as I can with like as close to 100% occupancy as possible. That's it. The off season, I'm not trying to push occupancy that much because the demand isn't necessarily there. Right at this point, I'm getting what I can. I can say, hey, I made $13,000 in July,
yeah,
and I made $900 in January. Right, and I'm not worried about trying to fill my calendar in January. The demand's not there. I'll take what I can get. We've had snowstorms in Hilton Head, which we haven't had in 20 plus years. You know what I mean? With snow sticking, breaking lanai, yeah. Like, you know, that's a Utah problem. That's not a South Carolina problem, right? I'm not trying to max. I'm going to do what I can in January, but it's that 5 month window for me. That's where I make my money. And that's my maximize. Right. I'm going to push and push and push and push and push right until we hear crickets, dial it back. But we also understand seasonality. We need to understand booking windows. If you're a very large property, you probably want to see that calendar, that peak season calendar full further out than if you're a smaller property. If you're like a one bedroom or like a couple's cabin, you can maximize weekdays. You can maximize weekends because it's easy for my wife and I to go do, maybe not with our kids, but it's easy for us as the two individuals to go do something together. When you start adding more people, more moving pieces, that booking window starts to expand further and further out, right? Even your cancellation policies, you're rewarded on the OTAs, especially Airbnb, on being very flexible with your cancellations. But if you're an 8-bedroom property and you only have a 3-month window to make all your money, I agree not being very flexible because you can't take losing July 4th 2 weeks prior. It's not going to work out the way you need to revenue wise. But outside of that, getting your bookings and being more flexible, you should be more flexible, right? You should be able to take that, you know, because then the consumer's willing to pay that. That means that's including your pricing. That's with your minimum stay requirements. That's within the way that you handle like your weekdays. I was on the call yesterday when you were talking to those members about their properties there, right? They would probably do better selling a third night on those weekends, but a Thursday or a Sunday at an extremely discounted rate than trying to push rates across the weekend, weekdays
because
the demand's not there, right? Yeah, right. And the consumer, if the consumer wants to buy something, give the consumer what they want, right? Don't try to force them into a box because a system or a pricing tool tells you this is, you know, I mean, that's no, the consumer's telling you what 100%. They want to buy.
And I will, I've got 2 minutes and I've got a hard stop on this podcast because I got another one right after this. And so, but I will tell a story I've told before on pricing, and we can dive into this even deeper maybe on another episode, but pricing is a very, very underutilized marketing tool. And it only works if you have good properties and top properties. But I remember I was explaining this. We're saying, hey, listen, you can, if I have a property in an area and everybody's charging $300 a night and I charge $600 a night, when you're looking on Airbnb and you're scrolling on that map and you see all the threes, 350, 349, 299, whatever, and then you see a 600, like, huh, what is that one? And like, we click on it. We naturally click on it because it's an attraction tool on the high side. Now, if you have a property that somebody will actually book on and they convert it and you give them that cost versus value and you actually answer that question, it works awesome, right? It only works to get, like, it'll always work to get your eyeballs on there. But somebody raised their hand I was doing a live event and he said, Sean, I would stop on that property. I would look at it but I would never book it. And it, you know, unless it was way different. I said, there you go. One, you would stop. Two, if I gave you a reason why it was different, you might do it or you might not, but somebody will. If I give them a reason and win that cost versus value conversation they have in their head. And so, but if you have unique, different properties, you've invested a lot into these unique experiences for a target audience, pricing is actually a phenomenal marketing tool. And actually, you can get a lot more money if you have the guts to go out and say, okay, we're going to be way overpriced on the market. We're going to be way above the market value average if I feel like I can have that cost versus value conversation with the consumer once they click on my property, you will get a lot of clicks. In fact, you can just go test it. Even if you don't have the chance of converting it, you can go test what I'm talking about. Go double the price on in your market on a property and see what your views do on your property. You'll get way more eyeballs on it. And just because people are like, what is going on here? Why is that one more expensive? Why is it better? I want to check it out. If you actually are better and it shows you're better and everything is working in your benefit on that cost versus value conversation in the consumer's head, and you start booking those properties, all of a sudden you're setting high watermarks in areas. And that's where when we invest in some of these properties, those are all those different types of strategies that we use on the pricing side. And the pricing sometimes we use on the marketing side as well, not just for the revenue side. So we're going to wrap it up, you guys. I have another meeting to jump right into, so I apologize that, but we went a full hour, so we got a lot in. We have a few more topics. We'll reach out till next week and keep them on the agenda. We'll look and see what Warsh does this today, and we'll talk a little bit about that. We're hoping for a pause, but the sentiment around it is not real good. I think that the stocks are dropping right now, and everything else are anticipating what he's going to talk about. So let's watch it close. We'll wrap up. You guys let us know if you have any questions. We'll get them on the agenda for next week. If you have questions on these live calls, just send them into the chat. We love to get interrupted a few times and get them actually answered live for you. So make sure that you do that. If you're watching or listening on whatever platform on the replay, give us a thumbs up, like it, review it. You don't have to listen to a bunch of commercials when you're listening to these podcasts. And the only way it grows is organically with you guys sharing it. So we always appreciate the thumbs up and the shares. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.